Good morning. Let's begin. What's today? Yud Ches, right? Today's Yud Ches. So we left, today's daf is Yud Ches. So we left off, Tan Rabbanon, four lines up from the bottom, Yud Zayin Amud Beis. Tan Rabbanon, Kishem Sha'amru Asr Legaleach B'moed, Kach Asr Litol Tzipor Naim B'moed, Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda said the same way, that you are not permitted to go ahead and shave, or engage in personal grooming on Chol HaMoed. So too it is Asr to go ahead and cut one's nails on Chol HaMoed as well. These words are Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yossi Matyu. Rabbi Yossi says that in fact, it's Mutter. So we'll say again, using this logic, what Rabbi Yehuda is saying is that cutting one's nails falls into, when Chazal said that you can't shave or you can't go ahead and cut your hair, what they were really asking was personal grooming. So anything that falls under the category of personal grooming will be asr on Chol HaMoed as well for the same logic. And if concerned that if you could do it on Chol HaMoed, you may not take the necessary grooming steps prior to Chol HaMoed. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi says that it's mutter. And the same way that we say that an avel is not permitted to groom himself during his avelus, so too he's not permitted to cut his nails during his days of avelus. Rabbi Yehuda, these words are Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yossi says it as well. Rabbi Yossi says, same machlokes Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi that applies during Chol HaMoed also applies during avelus. Amar Ula said, halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda be'evel, v'halacha k'Rabbi Yossi b'moed. So Ula says the halacha follows Rabbi Yehuda during avelus, namely that you can't cut your nails, but the halacha follows Rabbi Yossi for Chol HaMoed, namely that you can cut your nails. Shmuel said, halacha top of Yud Ches k'Rabbi Yossi b'moed u'be'evel. And Shmuel said, no, the halacha follows Rabbi Yossi, who says that it's mutter to cut your nails both on Chol HaMoed as well as during avelus. Why? D'amar Shmuel, halacha k'divrei Hamekel be'evel, because Shmuel and Rabbi said that in general, because the laws of avelus are rabbinic in nature, therefore lemaisa the halacha always follows the more lenient opinion. So because Rabbi Yossi is the more lenient opinion, the halacha follows him. Okay, so we'll say a fundamental machlokus between Shmuel and Ula. So the Gemara tells a story. Pinchas achud mar Shmuel Isra be Milsa. So Pinchas, the brother of Mar Shmuel, Isra be Milsa means something bad happened. And Rashi points out he lost a relative. The Marsha points out he lost a child, actually. He lost a child. So his child passed away. All Shmuel le Mishal Taima Mine. Shmuel went to go ahead and be Menachem Avo. He went to console him. Chazinhu litarfe dahavu nafisha. So Shmuel saw that Pinchas' nails were very long. Amarle, amai lo shakaltelahu. So he said to Pinchas, why have you not cut your nails? Now remember again, Shmuel was the one who said what? That the halacha follows Rabbi Yossi, both by avelus as well as by Chol HaMoed, namely, that you can cut your nails during avelus. So he asked Pinchas, why didn't you cut your nails? So the Pinchas said, "Amarle, ibidi dehava mi mizalzalasa be kulehai." So Pinchas responded, "If you were the one sitting shiva, essentially, would you be so makel? Meaning, it's very nice that you're telling me to be lenient, but would you observe this leniency yourself?" So the Gemara says, "Havi." This is actually very dramatic. Havi kishkaga shiyotze melefnei ashalit. When Pinchas said this, this was like a mistake that came out from the mouth of the messenger. I mean, I will say, when you person always has to be careful what they say. And when Pinchas said this idea that if you were in avelos, it almost created like an ayin hara for Shmuel. And he realized afterwards what he said, v'isra be'milsa b'shmuel. And only a little while later, Shmuel unfortunately lost a child. Al Pinchas achua le'mishal taima mine. Pinchas went to go be Menachem Avol from Shmuel now. When Shmuel saw him, shaklinhu litorfei, apparently Shmuel had cut his nails, because he had, remember he already said that halach was Rabbi Yossi, that lemais you're permitted to cut your nails during avelus. He took his nails, chavtinhu la'apei, and he threw it at Pinchas. So he took his collected nails and he threw it at Pinchas. Amarle, meaning he was very upset at Pinchas. Amarle, les l'cha bris krusilis vasayim. Do you not know literally that there is a covenant made with the lips? Look at Rashi. Rashi says, Bris Krusa L'Sfasai. Actually, don't look at Rashi yet. We'll see in just a moment. We'll say, Bris Krusa L'Sfasai means that when a righteous person says something, those words create a reality. Do you not know that when you say something, those words have the ability to create a reality? Why did you mention my name in the context with Avelos? Where do we know? So, Rabbi Yochanan, Minayim Shebris Krusa L'Sfasai. How do we know that there is a covenant that is made with the lips, that the words of a righteous person affect some level of reality? Shene Emar, Vayomer Avraham El Na'arav, Shvulachem Poimachamar. Because again, Avram said to his lads, stay here with the donkey. This is by Kedas Yitzchok. Va'ani Vahanar Nelcha Adko, V'nishtacha V'nashuva Aleichem. And what did Avram Avinu say? And I will go with the lad, I will go with Yitzchok, and we will prostrate ourselves, and we will come back to you. So Avram prophesied that what? That they would come back. The Istaya Milsa, the Hadar Tarvayu, and sure enough, how did it work out? That Avram and Yitzchak both returned back. It's actually interesting because there's a Homach Lokas and a Farshim. If where did Yitzchak go after the Akeda? Because it only sounds like Avram Avinu returned. But all right, Pasha Pshat is that Yitzchak Avinu came back as well. Therefore, we see from there, Bris Krusa L'Sfasai, that there is a covenant that is made with the lips, with words, and therefore, again, Shmuel was very upset at Pinchas. Savar Minei, Diyad in Diregalo. So the truth is, he assumed, look at Rashi, Savar Minei, Diyad Mutri Bimei Avlo, Mishum Dima'is Diregalo. So we'll say the assumption is that those who permitted you to go ahead and cut your nails, let's say during Chol HaMoed, during Avelos, what nails were we talking about? But Pashtos, it's the nails of the hand and not the nails of the feet. The logic behind that is because long nails could become repulsive. But the truth is, long toenails aren't as repulsive. Amrav, and therefore again, perhaps that's the only license to go ahead and cut nails on Chol HaMoed or Avelos. Amrav anam bar tachlifa lididi mefarshili minei de Shmuel lo shna de yad velo shna de regel. So Rav anam bar tachlifa said, I heard in the name of Shmuel that no, there's no distinction between fingernails or toenails, that you're allowed to cut both of them, both during Avelos as well as during Chol HaMoed. Amrav chibar ashi amrav ubig nustira aser. But you can't use a scissor. Meaning that if you want to go ahead and cut your nails during Avelos or during Chol HaMoed, you can cut it essentially with the shinui. So yeah, I guess you could bite them, right, with your teeth or some other way of cutting them. That's not a normative way. Garden shears, you know. So Amar of Shman Bar Abba. Just make sure you're near a local emergency room. So the Gemara says the following: Amar of Anan, Amar of Shman Bar Abba, Hava Ka'im Nachmed Rabbi Yochanan, Bei Midrash B'Chalosh HaMoed. I was once sitting by Rabbi Yochanan in the base medrash on Chol HaMoed, v'shaklinhu litorfei b'shinei, and I saw him biting his nails. I saw him biting his nails, v'zarkinu, and I saw him throw it down on the ground. Shema mina tlas. There are three things we learn from this. Shema mina motu litol siparayim b'chalosh Chol HaMoed. Number one, it teaches us that you're allowed to cut your nails on Chol HaMoed, again, granted with your teeth. Ushema mina ein bahem mishumius. And we see also that what? That it's not considered to be, that biting your nails is not considered to be a disgusting habit. It's actually interesting. That, right? Otherwise, again, if it was a disgusting habit, it would be something that a Talmud Chacham should not be permitted to go ahead and engage in. So it's interesting. The fact that he did it in the base medrash indicates that it's not a disgusting habit. Ushma mina motel zarkon. And you see from here that what? That you're allowed to throw your nails directly on the ground. So the Gemara says, Ini, is that true? V'hatanya, shlosha dvaram ne'emru b'tziparnayim. But yet we said that there are three things that are said about nails, fingernails. Hakovran tzaddik, if somebody covers their nails, buries your nails, we'll say, meaning if you cut your nails, what do you do with the clippings? So if you bury them, you're a tzaddik. Sarfan, if you burn them, you're a chassid. Zarkan, rasha. If you just throw them on the ground, you are a rasha. Why? Taimamai. Shema tavor alein isha ubra, v'tapil isha. So this was amazing. It is a very well-known idea, right? That is somehow, again, if a woman, pregnant woman, steps on fingernails, she could miscarry. So we'll say, so what's the pshat? So it's actually interesting. So if you look at Rashi, Rashi says, actually it's not Rashi here. Rashi is brought down a little bit later in the Masechta it's actually not here at all. You'll see over here in Nida. I'm sorry. Rashi in Nida quotes the following idea. He says it's a din in Mios. He says that a woman, if she steps on fingernails when she's pregnant, could become so revolted by it that it can make her sick, that she can miscarry. The Ben Yehoyada, I'm just telling you because it's very interesting, has a very esoteric idea about this. The Ben Yehoyada says that before Adam and Chava committed the sin by eating of the Eitz Das Tovara, so the Medrash brings down that they didn't have clothing, but their bodies were covered by like a fingernail-like substance, a fingernail-like, to protect them from anything on the outside. When they sinned, that fingernail protective layer fell off. They lost that layer of protection. The Ben Yehoyada says, and I don't remember who he quotes, the Ben Yehoyada says that when a pregnant woman steps on fingernails, it's reminiscent of what? Of the original sin of Chava. And that reminiscence of the original sin of Chava could chas v'shalom work against her, and God forbid, cause her to miscarry. So Lilith say, either again, Rashi, like a very rational idea, that it could just gross her out. And if it revolts her enough, she could literally become sick and chas v'shalom miscarry. Again, not that a woman it's an idea of, it's a public health concern. So we just don't want to create a situation of public health concern. Ben Yehoyada, exceptionally esoteric, that it once again reawakens the incredible negative energy of Chava's original sin. Okay. So the Gemara says, but nevertheless, you can do this by the Beis Medrash. Why? Because the truth is, in the times of the Gemara, there weren't women in the Beis Medrash, right? It was only the men. So therefore, I don't have to worry about a pregnant woman walking around in the Beis Medrash because the women weren't there. Maybe I should be choshesh that, you know, at some point in time, someone's going to sweep up the Beis Medrash, and they're going to, what do you do when you sweep up the Beis Medrash? You throw everything in the street, right? So maybe again, then the nails are going to go into the street, and a pregnant woman could walk on it there. Kevan the ishtani also is very interesting, that the whole fingernail thing, the only issue is when the nails are in the place that I originally threw them, or I originally dropped them. Once there's a change of location for the nails, then lemaisa, again, there's no concern about a woman miscarrying, which is very interesting because it's hard to understand how that fits in with the two ideas that we just said before. But nevertheless, that's what the Gemara says. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav Zug b'michamsin of Nei Rabbi. Rav Yehuda said, name of Rav, there was once a pair of individuals who came from Chamsin. Chamsin is a place who came before Rabbi. Umarzutra masni Zug b'michamsin of Nei Rabbi. Marzutra said it's not Rabbi Yehuda who said it, but rather it was a Braisa that said it. A pair of people came from Chamsin to Rabbi. Ubikshu mimeni tzi parnayim. They apparently were in Avelus. And what happened? And they asked Rabbi if they were permitted to cut their nails during their Avelus. V'hitir lahem. And Rebbe said yes. First wide line. V'imbik shumimeno safa. And if they would have asked Rebbe to trim their mustache, meaning they're not asking Rebbe to trim their mustache. But again, if they would have asked Rebbe for the permission to trim their mustache, then what? Hitcher lahem. He would have permitted that as well. Look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says, V'imbik shumimeno safa hayamatu lahem. Kilomar. Ana chazina ledate ishalu legalei chasafa hayematir lehem de'ein b'hem yishum b'tashchis pasikanecha. So it says, it's actually interesting. So why would they have asked to cut their mustache? Because presumably, if the mustache grows long, it can actually number one interfere with eating, and number two, it becomes a little disgusting because then if your food gets stuck in there, other things get stuck in there. So lemaisa, again, it doesn't look pleasant. So had they asked Rebbe for permission to cut their mustache, he would have given them permission for that as well. Says no. Af pikshim en asafa. In fact, they did ask from him permission to trim the mustache, and he gave them permission. V'hetir lahem amra vitol safra mishmei d'rav papa safa. When it comes to the trimming of the mustache, mizavis lezavis. Rabosa, if a mustache becomes overgrown, and Rashi points out it's ma'akeves achila ushtia umaz, it gets in the way of eating, it gets in the way of drinking, and generally because it's so long, food and drink get caught in it, and it's just disgusting. What's the halacha? You could trim it from one corner to the next corner, meaning the corners of your mouth. So you don't just have to trim it, let's say, you know, a little bit like right over here, but you could trim the entire thing over your entire lip. And Rav Ami says over here, Rav Ami says, I'm sorry. Yeah, ubisef makavis. And again, on the lip, it's the part ultimately that would preclude eating. Amrav Nachman bar Yitzchak, or not preclude, but would get in the way. Amrav Nachman bar Yitzchak lididi kisafa makavis damili. So again, remember, so Rabbi Ami says it's not just a stam license to go ahead and trim your mustache. This is if your mustache gets in the way of eating and drinking or becomes disgusting. Rav Nachman said, for me, my entire mustache is like ma'akeves. And what does that mean? Well, so if you look at Rashi Lididi, Da'anida Datoy, so Rav Nachman was a very fastidious individual. He was an istinis. See, he said, Kala safek esafa ma'akeves dami, Da'anida li datoy, dati. So here you have Rav Nachman, right? Yitzchok saying that for me, my entire mustache bothers me. See, even that which for some other individuals, so I don't think it meant he went Amish. You know, I don't think it meant that, but I think what it must mean is that he must have trimmed it back a lot. Even more than, let's say, what was necessary to prevent it from getting in the way of his food. Because he said, for me, I'm a very fastidious individual, and this bothers me. I'm sorry. Now we're just quoting a couple of more homiletic teachings. Paro shahaya bimei Moshe, the Paro who was the Paro in the days of Moshe. Who ama? He was one ama tall. He was one ama tall, which Rabbosai, remember, an ama is a foot and a half. Vizikno zikeno ama, and his beard was an ama tall. Uparmashtako ama. Rashi's parmashtako is amaso, his male organ. His male organ was ama vizeres, an ama and a half. Okay, let's say, so what's the pshat over here? So the Marsha brings down, he says, you have to understand what's happening here. What it means is, when he says that he was an amatol, it means that he was a very lowly individual. A very lowly individual. When it says that his beard was an amalong, so the beard represents chashivos. He thought he was very low, but he thought very highly of himself. When it says that, you know, his male organ was an ama and a half, right, which obviously in proportion to his body is obviously out of proportion, it means he was a very lustful individual. He was an incredible, incredible Baal Taiva. L'kai ma'ashin emar, v'shafal anashim yakim alei. V'amar avit osar from Yishmei Dirav Papa, paro shahaya bimei Moshe, the paro who lived in the days of Moshe, amagushi haya, he wasn't amagushi, shene emar hine yotze hamaimo, because the Pasuk says, behold, he's going out to the Nile. So what's amagushi? Rashi says, over here, machlokis b'mesechah Shabbos, chad amar charshi, lahach yotze liyor b'shol machshefos, one says amagushi means that he was a sorcerer, v'idach amar gidufi, lahach yotze sh'omer liyori v'ani asisani, gidufi means a blasphemer, that l'maisa, he says that he created everything. So either way, the Gemara says, that's why he used to go out to the water. So either he would go out to the water in order to do Kishuv, or he would go out to the Nile to proclaim his rulership over the Nile. Okay, so the Gemara goes right there. So we'll say, I'll tell you, halacha l'maisa, a Xerox sheets for everybody who wants, but I'm not going to distribute it now just because of time, but you'll take one afterwards. The Shulchan Aruch and Aruch Chaim Hilchos Chol HaMoed says, Mutar litol tziporayim bein diad bein diregel. You are permitted to cut your nails on Chol HaMoed, both your fingernails as well as your toenails, afilu b'misparayim, and the Mechaber Paskins, even with scissors. The Rama says, Hago aval yesh machmirim v'osrim. Others are machmir and say that it's aser. Why Rabbi say this is the shita of Rabbi Yehuda, right? Because again, Rabbi Yehuda holds that lemaisa again, that cutting your nails is part of the whole issue of personal grooming. And we should be concerned, just like we don't let you shave or take a haircut on Chol HaMoed, because we're afraid if we do, you won't do it beforehand. So cutting your nails should fall into the same category. So there's one machmir with nail cutting. V'chein hu aminog lahachmir shlo litlan. And therefore says the Rama, our practice, Ashkenazic practice, is we do not cut our nails on Chol HaMoed, bein besakin, bein b'misparayim, whether it's with a knife or whether it's with scissors. However, the Mishabura comments, you can't bite your nails. You can't bite your nails on Chol HaMoed. Im lo litzorach mitzvas tvila, shnot lan kidaka machal. Unless, of course, let's say a woman has to go to the mikvah. So a woman has to go to the mikvah, so a woman may have to cut down her nails to a certain degree. That is permitted to go ahead and be done on Chol HaMoed. So interesting. So again, Mechaber says you can cut your nails. Ramos says you cannot cut your nails. And of course, the minhag for Ashkenazi Jewry is we do not cut our nails with a utensil on Chol HaMoed, but we can go ahead and bite it. However, I will say, of course, if a person's nails are so long that it gets in the way of your doing things, then lemaisi you would be permitted to trim your nails in those circumstances. In Hilchos Avelos, the Shulchan Aruch, this is in Yoredeya, and again, I'm going to have sheets for you afterwards. The Shulchan Aruch writes, "Kishim she'asa legalecho shloshim yom, kach asra litol tziparnayim bikli." So the same way you can't cut your hair for 30 days, so the Shulchan Aruch paskins, you can't cut your nails either. Aval biyadav o b'shinav mutar, but you can peel off your nails or you can bite your nails. Afilu toch shiva. So that's how we paskin. So we paskin on both sides. So again, by avelos, it seems to be everyone agrees that lamaisa the avel cannot cut his nails. Again, with the same caveat that if the nails get in your way in some way, then you are permitted to trim them down. In cholamoid mechaber, so I guess Said left. I have to ask him next time that if Sfaradim really do paskin this way, that they cut their nails on cholamoid, because the mechaber seems to say it's absolutely mutter in accordance with the psak of Rabbi Yossi, but the Rama says we Ashkenazim are machmir, and we do not cut our nails. Okay, so that's the halacha lemaisa there. I have the sheets over here for afterwards. So the Gemara goes weiter. So remember the Mishnah said, these are the individuals who are permitted to launder their clothing. Someone who comes from overseas and did not have the chance prior to Yom Tov to go ahead and launder their clothing. Someone who only has one chaluk, one article of clothing. He is permitted to launder his clothing on Chalamoid. So we'll say, obviously, to me, someone over here where I did launder it before Chalamoid, but this is, I have one suit, I have one shirt. This is what I have. So Lemaisa says the Gemara, he is permitted to go to London on Chalamoid. Masiv Rabbi Yirmiyah, Rabbi Yirmiyah raised the kasha. Elu mechapsin b'moed. Yet the Mishnah said these are the individuals who are permitted to launder their clothing on Chalamoid. Who are they? Habam dinasiyam. Now remember, I said what the Gemara is picking up on over here is what the Mishnah said quite explicitly: a list of people who are permitted to launder their clothing on Chalamoid, and who's not included in the list. Who's not included in the list? Someone who only has one article of clothing. So it would appear based on the Mishnah that even if you have one article of clothing, no, I'm sorry, but you don't have a license to launder. To which the Gemara says, Hani'in, it's only the people listed in the Mishnah who have a license to launder. Mishe'inu ela chaluk echad, lo. But someone who only has one article of clothing does not have the license to launder. Amrli Rabacha, Amrli Rabbi Yaakov, Rabbi Yirmiyah, Asabra lecha masnisin. Rabbi Yaakov said to Rabbi Yirmiyah, let me explain to you the Mishnah. Afagav de isle trei umetanfi. That the Mishnah is talking about what Rabbi Osai, that even lemaisa, if a person has two articles of clothing and they got dirty, if a person did not have the opportunity to go ahead and launder their clothing prior to Yom Tov because they were coming from overseas, they have the license to do so on Yom Tov itself. Fine. Shalach Rabbi Yitzchak bar Yaakov bar Giri Mishnei Rabbi Yochanan. Klei Pishton, Mutr lechapsen b'chol ha-shamoid. If you have linen clothing, you are permitted to launder linen clothing on Chalamoid. Now, we'll say, what's the logic behind that? So Rashi says over here, it's actually Rashi on Amud Beis. He says, Klei Pishton below Nafish Tircha. Apparently, again, it's very easy to go ahead and launder linen clothing. It doesn't take a lot of effort. So because of that, you're permitted to even do so on Chalamoid itself. Massive Rava. Rava raises a kasha. He says, Mapechos hayadayim or Mapechos hasvarim. Hasaparim, excuse me. So we'll say, Mapechos hayadayim are hand towels. Mapechos hasaparim are barber cloths. Is that what we settled on? That we call it? Barber cloths? Smocks? Towels, we'll call it barber cloths. Good. Ain honey in clay pishtonlo. So what do you see? The mission before we learned that it's only again the hand towels, and it's only again the barber cloths that you're permitted to launder on chalamoid. Clay pishton not. So excuse me. Thank you. So Amalei Abayi says, "Amasnisin afilu d'shar mine." No. What the Mishnah means is like this: that I will say, when it comes to hand towels, when it comes to barber cloths, you can launder them no matter what material they are made of, right? However, no matter what material they are made of. However, when it comes to other utensils, if they're made of pishtun of linen, because linen is very easy to launder, so you are permitted to. There's no tircha involved, therefore, you're permitted to do so even on chalamoid. Omar Bar Hijja said, Lididi, listen to this, Lididi, I myself, Chazili, I saw Yama Shel Tveria, Demafkile Mashkile Demani Kisna Bechola Demoada. So here you have Bar Hijja saying, I saw that people, that the Yam of Tveria, I presume, is the Kinneret. So I saw that the Kinneret was filled with buckets of linen clothing on Chol HaMoed. In other words, what is he saying? I'm telling you, I saw it. You can argue all you want. I'm telling you that I saw that the Kinneret was filled with people, bless you, laundering their linen clothing on Chol HaMoed. So we'll say he's giving eyewitness testimony to what's done. Bless you. So listen to what they respond to Bar Hedja. Man le malan de baratzon chachamim avdi. Dilma shalab baratzon chachamim avdi. So what do they respond to Bar Hedja? Just because you saw people doing it doesn't mean that it was right, right? People do all kinds of things all the time. Now we'll say, what Bar Hedja is really saying is, that's fine if you see one person doing something, or you see even a couple of people doing it. But when he's saying, obviously a little bit of hyperbole over here, when he says the entire Kinneret, what he's saying is, I saw a lot of people. When you see a lot of people, especially again in public doing something, the pashtos, we have to assume that people aren't transgressing the law publicly and en masse. See, he felt that this eyewitness testimony was in fact halacha lemaisa enough to be able to say that in fact you can launder clay pishut. And I will say, in fact, again, it's not really so as lemaisa for us today, but the Shulchan Aruch does pask in this way, that clay pishtun, because there is very little tircha involved, you are permitted to launder it on Yom Tov itself, says the Mishnah. On clay pishtun?
Yeah.
Just from the diuk in the Mishnah. Correct. So no one's really arguing. It's correct. Bar Hedja is just saying, the Maisa, I saw it. No matter what you're saying, I saw it. So they're just saying, just because you saw it is not a raya. That's all. So the Mishnah says the following. So we'll say now, remember, we're going through the different restrictions on Chol HaMoed. Now the Mishnah talks about what can be written on Chol HaMoed. Now we'll say, the assumption is that, remember, and this has been lost a little bit, especially, again, you know, in Eretz Yisrael, if you have the privilege to be in Eretz Yisrael for a Chag, so Chol HaMoed still feels like Yom Tov. It's one of the great things we lack in Chutz La'aretz is that Chol HaMoed is much more Chol and like a little bit of Moed, or a very little bit of Moed. But the idea is really, in its essence, Chol HaMoed really is still Yom Tov, to the point that, to the degree that I can minimize the amount of malacha that I'm doing. Obviously, there are certain things that I don't have to walk to shul instead of driving to shul, but the idea is, but other malacha, like writing or things like that are not necessary for the Moed, should be curtailed. So therefore, the Mishnah says over here, the Ilukos of Moed, these are the things that you can write on Chol HaMoed. And what are they? Kiddushei Nashim. Now, we'll say, we'll discuss what Kiddushei Nashim means. Rashi says over here, Shakasa b'shtar hari at mikudesh asli, d'isha niknis b'shtar. Remember again, the first Mishnah in Kiddushin. Ha'isha niknis, right, b'gimel drachim, b'shkesef shtaro b'biyah. Right, with dvarim, with, so a woman could be betrothed in three ways: kesef, shtar, and bia. So shtar, what does it mean? A shtar, you're literally right in a shtar. Hari at mikudeshesli b'shtar zu kedas Moshe v'Yisrael. You are betrothed to me with the shtar. So it seems to be the Mishnah saying that you could write a shtar like this on Chol HaMoed. V'gittin, you could write again on Chol HaMoed. V'shovrin and receipts. Now I will say shovrin usually means talking about if you paid a woman or ksuva, so it'd be in the husband's best interest to go ahead and write the receipt so that she cannot collect the ksuva a second time. Dayatiki, Rashi says dayatiki is a shar tzava. If somebody's on their deathbed and they want to go ahead and they want to divide up their estate, so, and they want it put down in writing, that's called the dayatiki. Matana, a gift document. I want to convey someone to a gift, but I want to convey it to them in a document. Pruzbulin, I will say, very, very nice actually for upcoming Shemitah. Pruzbulin, remember again, Shemitah wipes out all debts. It's very important, Aloha. If you have a loan, if you have lent money to someone, if you do not take necessary measures, Shemitah will wipe out that loan. A Pruzbul is a document by which one gives over their loans over to Beis Din. It now becomes Beis Din's loan. They have the power of collection, and Shemitah does not wipe out loans that are held by Beis Din. So you can write that on. You can write that on Chol HaMoed. Igros Shum. Rashi says over here, Igros Shum are Bekach Shamu Beis Din Sadazu. These are documents of evaluation that if Beis Din went ahead and appraised how much a particular field is worth. Now, they would do that very often for property settlements. Let's say if you had an estate, and again, let's say a father did not leave explicit instructions how to go ahead and divide up an estate, but or let's say he didn't necessarily give certain children certain parcels, but instead he said, I want, you know, this son to have 20%, this son to have 30%, this. So Beis Din would evaluate the properties to see how much everything is worth. Next, the igros mazon. Igros mazon, I will say, are literally documents of sustenance, which points out over here, let's say if a man marries a woman and the woman has children from a particular marriage, specifically a daughter, so the husband undertakes the responsibility to sustain, to support his wife's daughter. That's called igros mazon. Shtari chalitza, document of chalitza, umiunim, and a document of miun. I will say, so miun is that if a mother or a brother marry off, or really the truth is, it's anyone, marries off a minor girl, she has the ability to go ahead and refuse that marriage before she becomes a gedola. Say, I don't want to marry this individual. That's called miun. Shtari berurin. Rashi points out, shtari berurin is beru beizin chelik zeh lezeh v'chelik zeh lezeh. That's a document where Beis Din go ahead and again in an estate assign certain properties to certain children. Gezeros Beis Din, decrees of the Beis Din. V'igaros shel rashus, and documents, letters or decrees of the government. All of these things could go ahead and be written down on Chol HaMoed. And I will say, there are various reasons why different one of these things could be written down. Some of these things, again, have to do with issues of time. Like if somebody's on their deathbed, you know, we don't say, well, you know, let's wait till after Shavuot or Shavuot, we'll wait till after Chol HaMoed, they won't take care of it. You have to take care of this situation now. Sometimes, if something needs a sofer, you have to be concerned that the sofer may not be available after Chol HaMoed. Other things like a get, if a man is going overseas, you want to make sure that gets taken care of right now. And other things, you also want to make sure they don't get forgotten. So the common denominator in all of these things that I mentioned in the Mishnah is that there's a specific reason why you would want to write them down here and now. Says the Gemara, Amar Shmuel, Mutila Aris Isha B'Chalosh Amoid. You're permitted to betroth the woman on Chol HaMoed. Now, also remember, we already said before, you can't get married on Chol HaMoed, right? Remember, we learned that before. Why? Because Ein Ma'arvin Simcha B'Simcha. Because again, remember the Gemara's drasha, V'samachta B'Chagecha, Velo bi'ishtecha, right? You should rejoice in the Yom Tov, but not in your wife. You should rejoice with your wife, but the idea is that the simcha of your Yom Tov should not be because you're getting married. The simcha of... Please don't misuse that statement and quote me, right? I can see already so many smiles happening over here, right? So the idea over here is that the simcha of the Yom Tov comes from the Yom Tov itself and not from the fact that I got married. So what the Gemara is pointing out over here is I can't get married, but mutar la'aris, but I can betroth them. Remember, I will say that marriage is comprised of two parts. There's erusin and nisuin. So apparently I can't do nisuin on Chol HaMoed, but I can do erusin. I will say, now what's erusin? Erusin, we do this all together under the chuppah, but if contemporarily erusin is when I give my wife a ring. Right, and I give my offering. Ad mikudesh asli betabazuk das Moshe Yisrael. That's erusin. At that moment, we're married. Can't live together, but we are married at that moment. So apparently, the Gemara says, you see from me that you could do erusin on Chol HaMoed. So the Gemara says, why? Listen to this. Shema yikad menu acher. Because I will say, if you find a good woman, you do not want to let her go. And you have to be concerned that if you don't take the necessary steps, then lemais against someone else may also realize that she's a wonderful woman and ultimately may take the steps before you. So the Gemara says, so say that our Mishnah supports this. This is what we could write. This Mishnah said, these are things that can be written on Chol HaMoed. Kiddushin Nashim. So it says you can write Kiddushin Nashim. My love, Shtari Kiddushin Mamish. Does this not mean Shtari Kiddushin themselves? Meaning, again, is the Mishnah not talking about where you literally write, Hari At Nikudesh Asli Bishtar Zu? No, not necessarily. Rather, it can refer to Lo Shtari Psikta. I could refer to what? Shtari psikta. What is shtari psikta? Shtari psikta essentially are financial agreements between families. You could have gidl amarav, dom rav gidl amarav. What's the shtari psikta? Kama ata nosin lebincha, kach, kach v'kach, kama ata nosin lebitcha, kach v'kach, amdu v'kidshu, kanu hein hein hadram niknim ba'amira. So I'll say, interestingly enough, remember, this is what we call today tanoim. So they used to write tanoim. What was written in tanoim? So the father of the groom would say, I'm going to give them so-and-so. The father of the bride would say, I'm going to give them so-and-so. They'd agree on the terms. They'd shake, right? And again, these words would become binding. And lemaisa, right afterwards, the chasen and kala would become betrothed. So the Gemara just suggests, we'll say that Shtari Kiddushin does. So here's what's interesting. No one's disagreeing about the fact that you could betroth a woman on Chalamoid, Shema Yikad Meno Acher, because perhaps again someone may beat you to it, someone may beat you to the chuppah. So everyone agrees you could do that. The Shaila is, what's the document that you're writing? So the Gemara is just suggesting that it doesn't have to be that the document that the Mishnah is allowing you to write is a Shtari Kiddushin, because Kiddushin can be accomplished in other ways that don't require writing. It could be that the Shtar that's being referred to over in the Mishnah is what? Is what we call today Tinoim, is a document that outlines financial responsibilities between families. Perhaps they should come to support this. You may not marry a woman on Chalamoid. Lo besulos for the amanos, whether it's a besula, whether she's an amana. Velo miyadmin, nor can you perform yibum. Mipnei shesimcha hilo, because Rabbi say all of these things are an incredible source of simcha. And therefore, again, v'samachta b'chagecha, v'lo b'ishtecha, hala arisha, what can we infer from here? That you can't, nisuin is aser, but erusin will be absolutely mutter. To which the Gemara says, well, maybe not, lo mi bai kamar, maybe it's not saying that. Lo mi bai la ares de lo ka'avid mitzvah, I have said like this, maybe, certainly you can't do erusin, why? Because erusin, there's no mitzvah involved in that. Ala afilu lisa, nami de ka'avid mitzvah aser. But rather, again, it goes without the Gemara entertaining another possibility. Maybe you can't even do erusin. Why? Because erusin has no mitzvah. The chiddush is what? That nisuin, where there is a mitzvah, you still can't do that. Tashma, detani debei Shmuel, ma'arsin avalo konsin. Right, that the halacha is that in fact you are permitted to do erusin, but you may not do nisuin. Ve'ein osin suudas erusin, and you cannot go ahead and do a suud of erusin. So we'll say, interestingly enough, so the Maisan, the Gemara is saying is you can do erusin, but we don't make a big suud of erusin on Chalamoid itself. Velo miyabmin, and you can't go ahead and do yibum. Mipnesha simcha hilo shmamina. So we'll say, indeed, we see from here that halacha lamaisa, you can go, you can't fully marry, you can't do nisuin on Chalamoid, but you are permitted to do erusin on Chalamoid. But however, you can't make a big su'uda for erusin on Chalamoid as well. Umi amar Shmuel shami kamenach. And I will say, remember, all of this is predicated on what? Why do we allow a man to betroth the woman on Chalamoid out of this fear that someone else is gonna get her? Right? That someone else is going to also find her redeeming qualities and is going to betroth her before you have a chance. So the Shmuel really say that. Va'amar avihud amar Shmuel. But yet Shmuel said, b'chol yom v'yom bas kol yotzeis v'omeres. Bas ploni laploni, sada ploni laploni. But Rabbi said, yet Shmuel said that every day a bas kol comes out and says that so and so is going to marry so and so, and this so and so's field is going to belong to so and so. Rabbi said, in other words, what does the bas kol say? The bas kol says that there are two things that are really dictated from above: who you marry, and your parnasa. Those are two things that ultimately are determined from above. So if indeed my marriage is determined from above, so what's the rush? Right? What's the rush? Amir Hashem again. What do you mean Shema Yikad Mena Acha? Someone else is not gonna marry. She's meant for me. So what is Ella Shema Yikad Mena Acha Barach? And Rabbi said, this is amazing. So rather, what could happen? Someone else may trump my Bashert through, or someone else may have the opportunity to marry my Bashert, even if what? Through tefillah. So again, let me clarify that. So what the Gemara is saying is like this. If indeed there's this bas kol that comes out that says so-and-so is going to marry so-and-so, it means it's divinely ordained, which means I don't have to worry that someone else is going to beat me to the chuppah. So therefore, why would Shmuel allow for erusin on Chalamoid? To which the Gemara answers, because as much as there is this concept of Bashert, someone else through their tefillah could potentially end up with the person I'm supposed to marry. How so? Listen to this. Rava once overheard a particular man that was davening. And what happened? Va'amar tizdamili planisa. And he was davening, please let me marry so-and-so. He was davening to marry a particular woman. Amarle, so Rava heard this, and he said to the man, lo tibay rachmi hachi. Don't daven for that. You should not daven to marry a particular woman. Why? Ichaz yalach lo azlaminach. Because if she is meant for you, then she will not leave you. Ilo, and if she's not meant for you, kafarta b'Hashem, then literally again, Kafarta b'Hashem, Rashi says over here, ba'amana, the Kamar d'lo Messiah tzalusa klum. It's actually interesting. Rava says you're going to get angry with God. Why? Because you're davening for something that you shouldn't have, and you're not going to get it. And when you don't get it, what's going to happen? You're going to be disappointed. Ultimately, angry with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So don't daven for that. Basar hachi shamei de ka'amar. Afterwards, the guy wouldn't stop. And so he changed his tefillah. What was his tefillah? O ihu lemos mikama. O ihi tamos mikame. So you know what? If she's going to marry someone else, then either let her die before she marries that other guy, or let me die before she marries that other guy. I mean, this is like, mom is like lovesick, right? So I can't bear to see her marry someone else. Either let her die before she marries someone else, or let me die before she marries someone else. Amar le lava minalacha lo tibay ale dimelsahachi. So Rava says to the guy, did I not tell you not to do this? That's an interesting story. Did I not tell you not to do this? The point that Gemara is making over here is, apparently, again, it's an incredible insight into the koach ha-tefillah. Apparently, the power of tefillah is such that as much as there is the concept of vashert, perhaps, again, someone else through their tefillos could end up with the woman that I'm supposed to be with. So therefore, again, to make things very simple. Therefore, the Maisa Shmuel Paskins, halacha lemaisa, if you find the right woman, betroth her, and don't wait for that. Again, even though it sounds like over here that the tefillos wouldn't work, that's what it sounds like over here, the tefillos wouldn't work, nevertheless, because tefillah could affect some level of change, if you find her, betroth her even on Chol HaMoed. Amarav Mishum Rabbi Ruvain, it's tarbuli. Mina Torah, mina veim, mina ksuvim. There are three different rayas from Torah, veim, and ksuvim. This idea that a person's wife, that a spouse is mina shamayim. Where do we see that from? So the Gemara says, Me Hashem Ishli Isha, Mina Torah, Dichsiv, Vayan, Lavanu Besuv, Yomer, Me Hashem Yatzah Adavar. This is interesting. This parashat Chayi Sarah, when Eliezer comes to find the wife for Yitzchak, and he wants to take Rivka, and what do Lavan and Besuv say? This matter came from God, right? The fact that Eliezer found Rivka, he asked her for a drink, she offered to water all of the camels. So you see, even they recognize that Shiduchim come from Hashem. Min Nevi'im, Dichsiv, This is by Shimshon, that when Shimshon wanted to marry the Philistine girl, his parents did not realize that this whole thing was orchestrated by God. A home and wealth are often inherited from one's fathers, but it is only from God that one is given the gift of a wise wife. Va'amar Rav Mishum Rabbi, Mishum Rabbi Ruvain ben Itzarbuli, Va'amar Rav Masnisa, Tana, Amar Rav Ruvain ben Itzarbuli, Ein Adam Nechshar B'davar, Ela Imken Asar, this is amazing Gemara. A person is not suspected of something unless, of course, he did it. It's very interesting that suspicions only come up, suspicions have to be rooted in some level of reality. Listen to this. V'imla asa kulo, and even if you didn't do all of what you're suspected of, asa miktsaso, you must have done something. V'imla asa miktsaso, and if you didn't do something, hear, beliba la asoso, you must have thought about doing it. V'imla hear, beliba la asoso, and if you didn't go ahead and think about doing it, ra'a achirim sha'asu v'samach, you must have seen others do it, and you quietly rejoiced in doing that. I will say, this obviously is a very, very, very strong Gemara, because it's every single time somebody is suspected of doing something, it means that there's some, what the Gemara is saying essentially, is there's some reality of truth in it. Maz Rabbi Yaakov, Rabbi Yaakov says, what are you talking about? He raises a kasha. Vayachbu b'nei Yisrael dvar mashar asher lo kein al Hashem elokeihem. So the pasuk over here, is quoting over here, the pasuk from Tehillim. No, I'm sorry. The pasuk from Malachim Beis. Thank you. That Klal Yisrael, again, this is by the Beis Hamikdash, by the Mikdash Rishon, that they accused one another of doing things that they knew were actually not true. So the Gemara says, "Hasam lahachis hu da'avid." There, they were only doing it to arouse the anger of one another. Tashma vaykanu lemoshe b'machana vaykanu lemoshe b'machana la'aron kedosh Hashem. The pasuk in Tehillim says that Rav Osei, interestingly enough, they were vaykanu lemoshe. Now vaykanu lemoshe literally means they were jealous of Moshe. The Gemara darshins Rav Shmuel bar Yitzchak Amar melamid shekol echad ve'echad kine li'ishto mimoshe. Rav Osei, listen to this: that there was a point in time where every single man warned his wife against being alone with Moshe. Now, I will say, now what does that mean? Why did the men warn their wives against being alone with Moshe? That they suspected Moshe Rabbeinu of committing adultery. Now, there are two possibilities as to why they suspected Moshe Rabbeinu of committing adultery. Number one, because Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't living with his own wife. So the men thought, you know what, there's no way that a man could live a celibate life. He must be satisfying that desire with someone else's wife. Or actually, the Maharsha brings down something very interesting. The Maharsha brings down that when the men wanted to build the egel, so the men went to their wives and asked them for their jewelry. And the women said no. But yet when Moshe said to build the Mishkan and he put out the call for the gold and silver, what happened? The women brought everything willingly. The husbands got very upset. When we ask you for your jewelry, you say no. When Moshe asks you for your jewelry, you're all willing to give. What's going on over here? So they thought there was something going on with their wives in Moshe Rabbeinu, which is amazing. I will say how people create alternate realities. They didn't say, you fool. Yeah, your wife didn't want to participate in idolatry. She didn't want to participate in a rebellion against God. That's why she didn't give. No, that's not it. So they warned their wives against being alone with Moshe Rabbeinu. So I will say, so again, if you say, so what are you going to say? You're going to say that Lamaisa every single time. Every single time you're suspected of something and there's some truth to it, here's the proof. That's not the case. Was there some truth that Moshe Rabbeinu was suspected of adultery? Of course not. To which the Gemara says, "Hasam mishum sinahu da'avid." There, you know why they warned their wives against being alone with Moshe Rabbeinu? Because they had a hatred and animosity towards Moshe Rabbeinu. So therefore, the Gemara says over here, and we'll stop over here for today, what the Gemara essentially says, Lamaisa, you see, it's not true. You could have a situation where someone is accused of some type of wrongdoing, and there is absolutely no truth associated with it. Why? Because Lamaisa, again, sometimes if someone really hates you, someone really has sin towards you, they could say things about you that are not rooted in any type of reality. All right, well, let me pick up over here tomorrow.